When it was over, there's nothing left standing, nothing moving, nothing to say. They drove the prisoners east to the boats for their hanging from the gallows overlooking Guantanamo Bay. He's a cowboy president, but he wears a black hat. In old America, you'd never get away with that. With an ego the size of Texas and his brand on Iraq, he's a cowboy president, but he wears a black hat. He's a cowboy president, but he wears a black hat.
Good afternoon, America. Welcome to Mark Levine's Inside Scoop on Washington, bringing you all the news from the nation's capital that the government does not want you to know. Today, of course, is Inauguration Day. The president has just taken his oath of office for 4 more years. And I don't know. We'll see what he does over the next 4 years and whether he can dig us out of what he did in the first 4 years. It's an open guess as to whether he can do that. I attended the counter-inaugural, and the reason why you hear special music today is that is the music of Yikes McGee. He is a protester who actually was there at the inaugural. He's a folk singer, and they were playing his music, and so I thought I'd share some of the music of the protest here with you today. And it was good shaking Yikes' hand. Look, it's a question of whether our country can come together or not. I don't know whether we can. I know that when I said I was going to the counter-inaugural, the blog was filled up with all kinds of things. A number of them said that basically I was helping the enemy. The fact that I would attend the counter-inaugural and speak and talk about what I would do if I were Attorney General, what a Democratic presidency would do in contrast to the current president. And I've got people basically accusing me of cavorting with the enemy. Is that what America's come to in the second Bush administration? If you dissent, if you disagree with the administration's policies, you're somehow equivalent to the Taliban? Well, apparently the right wing seems to think so. And it's really pushing our America closer and closer to the George Orwellian vision, one where dissent is seen as unpatriotic. And I think that my listeners, my usual listeners, you don't go that far. I know that my conservative listeners don't believe dissent is unpatriotic. I don't believe that dissent was unpatriotic when Bill Clinton was president. And I hope you don't think so here. What I want to talk about today, I want to talk about the protesters, the good, the bad, and the ugly. And there was a little bit of all of that there at the protest. And then I ran back home. And I turned on, I taped the inauguration speech because I do think it's important to hear what the president has to say. And I want to talk about his inauguration speech, what he said. It basically had two parts. It can be summarized, I think, in very few words. The first half was freedom. Freedom is good. That's basically all he said for about 10 minutes. Freedom is good. And the second part had to do with the fact that we all have to depend on ourselves. Not on each other, not on government. We're on our own. Ask not what you can, what your George Bush was saying. Ask not what you can do for your country, I think, but ask what your country can do for you. You're on your own. Now that's how I heard his speech, even though some of his words may have said the opposite. I want to go through his speech, talk about what he said, my views on it. I want to hear your views on it. You're always welcome to call in, agree or disagree. That's what this show is about. All you do is dial toll-free 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. I began the day by heading out to McPherson Square, which is about a block from the White House, and attended the, well, one of many counter-inaugurals. In fact, one of the interesting things about dissent is that we don't all agree with each other. And that's okay. That's as it should be. People oppose this administration for many different reasons. And I attended the inaugural, and I think we had a lot of interesting things to say. I think we had a lot of fun, a lot of spirit, and yes, I think there was some sadness. Some sadness that we understand that it'll take a decade to undo what George Bush did in 4 years. It may take 2 decades to undo what he does in 8 years. But everyone was there. The billionaires for Bush were there. They were quite a lot of fun. They came and told us how an ownership society, of course, meant that they get to own everything. And if we would all just fall in line and work in their factories, we would all be better off. There were people there opposing the war. There were young people. There was Granny D, 95 years old, giving her speech on how voting matters. There were Greens there, Libertarians. Lots of different people. Some people I agree with, some people I don't agree with. But I think what we all agreed with is that dissent is patriotic. And I guess if there's one thing I want to get across today, and, well, there are lots of things I want to get across, but the main thing I think that people need to understand is that dissent is patriotic. You know, it dates all the way back 200 years. You can go back to the John Adams presidency when they passed the Sedition Act. Sedition, of course, is those who speak against the government. And John Adams said, if you speak against the government, we're going to imprison you. And indeed, it was the reaction against that that elected Thomas Jefferson and began the great Democratic Party, of which I am proudly a member. The Democratic Party was formed on the idea that you have every right to oppose your government, and indeed, it goes further than that. You have a duty to oppose the policies of your government when they're wrong. That does not mean you oppose America, but simply oppose the policies of their government. So we set up an alternative government, and for one glorious hour, if you will, we heard what our government would do. We had the Secretary of Health and Human Services at our counter-inaugural say that science should dictate U.S. health policy, not politics, and that she would allow scientists actually to promote science and not let a government bureaucrat say we don't like what science has said, so we're going to put in our own agenda. If science says evolution is the theory that best explains human development, we'll let that happen even if it opposes certain political views. If science says that, you know what, whatever you feel about abortion, it doesn't cause breast cancer, we will popularize the truth and not put out propaganda. If science says, in fact, that if we don't teach contraception, more children get sexually transmitted diseases, again, let the science prevail. We had people who cared about the environment and felt that, you know what, we shouldn't be beholden to Saudi oil. That maybe, just maybe, it might be better if we could have our own resources in the United States and not be controlled by oil. We had people who cared about education, actually felt that maybe we should increase the amount of student loans with the population instead of cutting it. We had people there who talked about the right to vote. And yes, when I was Attorney General for all of 10 minutes during my speech, yes, I talked about the right to vote. And I have to tell you this. I see that part of our movement is growing. I don't care whether you're Republican, Democrat, Libertarian, or Green. I don't know any American that will, on record, they'll do things behind closed doors, but any American that will, on record, say, I support the current voting machines, even though they allow fraud. I don't know anyone that's saying that. And I think that even as you heard on Debate Tuesday with the chairman of the Republican Party of Northern Virginia, he came and agreed with me, we need to have paper tracking so that we can check our voting machines. We can and will have a fair election in the United States. There were other things I would do as Attorney General. I talked about the fact that I would free the justice statute. There's a statue, of course, the Department of Justice that John Ashcroft had to cover because that a woman's bare breasts, and we all know how offensive the naked upper body of a woman is. We would free those, but in more than that, we would free people from our prisons because under my tenure as Attorney General, I would actually follow the Constitution. I would follow the Bill of Rights. I told the audience that actually the Bill of Rights provides, and it's an extraordinary thing, it's even more extraordinary that it's 200 years old, that you can't go to jail unless you have been accused of a crime, and you can't stay in jail unless you've been convicted of a crime. Now, I know that's extraordinary for our times. I know George Bush doesn't agree. George Bush believes you can round up anybody for any reason, not have to give that reason, and keep them in jail forever. In that, of course, George Bush agrees with Saddam Hussein, and for that matter, Stalin and a lot of other dictators who believed you could round up people and not give them a trial. But the Bill of Rights says otherwise, and I think that if I were Attorney General, I would enforce the Bill of Rights. That doesn't mean we can't punish terrorism. That doesn't mean we can't punish terrorists, even with the death penalty if necessary. But we would do so only after a trial. We would not hold people indefinitely without giving them a trial. I also talked about the fact that in my administration, the death penalty would be fairly applied. It wouldn't be the case that if you're rich, like O.J. Simpson, you get off, and if you're poor, like those poor schlubs down in Texas, who had no one to defend them, who had lawyers asleep during their trial, they got the death penalty under George Bush as governor. If I were Attorney General, of course, things would be different. We would make sure that every American, at least, who's accused of a capital crime, I think it should be actually any American accused of a crime, any American who could lose their freedom in jail, but at least those in charge of a capital crime, we can't kill them unless we allow them to have a defense. And I know that's extraordinary, and some of you are going to call that socialist. The idea that we can't murder an American citizen without giving him the right to a defense, what a radical idea. And yet it's in our Constitution. It's in our Bill of Rights. It's due process. It's something I would support if I were Attorney General in the new administration. If I were Attorney General, we would take this drug war, and instead of spending $50,000 a person and putting them in jail for using a drug like marijuana, what we would do, first of all, I would legalize marijuana. No, I wouldn't legalize driving while stoned. I think that's, you know, bad, just like driving while drunk. It's bad, it kills people, it's dangerous. And no, I probably wouldn't hire anyone to work for me who was a stoner. But you know what? Marijuana is less dangerous than cigarettes. I, for one, have never smoked a joint in my life, never smoked tobacco either. I don't intend to do either, but it's interesting to me that for a president that talks a lot about freedom, he wants to crack down on people who have stupid habits. I think we could save a lot of money and save a lot of lives, get them out of prison by shutting down the drug war, sending people to treatment centers if necessary for some of the harsher drugs, and saving a lot of lives. I went on and on about, again, what I would do as Attorney General, mostly citing the Bill of Rights. And I guess it was amazing to me and to my audience how far we've come from the Constitution. The president today promised to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States. And you know what? The Bill of Rights is in the Constitution. And as we talked about, as I pointed out, that's something that, well, we need to protect. So at the counter-inaugural, there were other groups there. It wasn't just myself and our group. We had all kinds of groups. We had lots of Greens. I met the Green chair, the Green candidate for president and vice president. I met David Cobb. In fact, he agreed to come on my show. I'm going to have him on a little bit later on in the next couple weeks. You're going to get to hear from him. And all kinds of groups, people who are opposed to war, people whose agendas I don't agree with. And, you know, it's an interesting question, and I want to hear from you what you think in terms of how you construct a movement to bring back our civil rights, to bring back the Bill of Rights, the Constitution, to say that our civil liberties do matter in America. Should we join with people who we disagree with on other ideas? It's an interesting question. Sometimes I could be up on a podium and, well, some of the people that certainly came after me, I'm not sure I agree with everything they said. So I want some help here. I'm going to get into the Bush inauguration speech after the break, but I do want to hear from you on who we should join with and who should we should exclude. Maybe we should exclude no one. How a movement can be created to win back the White House in 4 years, to win back the Congress in 2 years, and more importantly, to win back American freedom. For all the talk of the president at the inauguration today about freedom abroad, about freedom in foreign lands, the one place he didn't mention freedom was here in the United States. He didn't mention the fact that we have the largest population per capita in jail in the world, and that they're put in jail largely for drug crimes that, frankly, our president himself hasn't denied using these kinds of drugs. Our president hasn't denied using cocaine, which has a minimum sentence of many years. And yet, we're putting productive citizens in jail. And it was just the irony of all his talk about freedom as they were rounding up protesters, as they were not letting protesters attend the parade route. All this talk about freedom, and I've got conservative bloggers who are telling me that just to speak out against the President of the United States, that kind of dissent is un-American and helping our enemies. But you know what? We really shouldn't despair. When you look at the election of 2004, first of all, you may not notice this, but Kerry won more states than Al Gore. He won the exact same... actually, I take that back. He lost New Mexico and Iowa, I think, and he won back New Hampshire. So he won about the same as Al Gore. The difference is that it was a close election. The President of the United States, George Bush, won re-election by the smallest percentage in American history. And that's important to remember. He won by about 3%, a little bit less than 3%. No president has ever been re-elected with a smaller margin, a smaller percentage margin than George W. Bush. This country is still very much divided. And I think Americans, many of us, wish the president well, wish he would reach out, wish he would reach to the other side, reach to Democrats, reach to people who disagree with him, reach to people who, like those of us who are right on the war. And he won't admit we're right, but he knows we were. There were no weapons of mass destruction, and there was no connection with Al-Qaeda. And it did. They didn't greet us as liberators, and it did take a lot of troops and lives and money and cost. All the things Bush said were wrong. If he would give the slightest and say, you know what? You know what? Some of our critics were right. Some of our critics were right. I was wrong to say we'd be greeted as liberators. I was wrong to say mission was accomplished a year ago. I'm going to turn over a new leaf and have an administration that values disagreement. Sure, the president will make the decisions, but I will listen to dissenters. As we know, of course, the president has kicked out the dissenters, kicked out people like Colin Powell, who mean well, but sometimes tell the president he's wrong. Tell the president, hey, you know, if you go into Iraq and you break it, you bought it. George Bush didn't want to hear that. And so I want to talk about his speech to the country and whether you felt it did reach out. Because he's constructing a cabinet, of course, where he's getting rid of all the people that would tell him no, filling it up with loyalists. And I have to say, to me, the best moment of the whole day was certainly not Bush's speech. And it wasn't even the protest. The best moment for me the whole day was riding back on the metro when I had a conversation with a group of high school students who really are our future. And I'll tell you about that too when we come back. If you want to call in and join this discussion, tell me what you thought about Bush's speech. If you attended the counter inaugural, and I got to thank all those radio listeners out there. You know, I don't often know who my listeners are. They're the regulars that contribute to the blog. They're the regulars that call in, and I love you regulars. But there are a lot of you that listen to my show on the radio, on the internet, and you never call in, you never write on the blog. I don't even know you're there. It was great to see all of you at the counter inaugural. Say, Mark, I love your show, and I would say, who are you? And I had no idea who you were because you never contributed. And that's okay. If you only have a chance to listen, and that's fine. Be great, though, if you'd write in from time to time on the blog or call in from time to time, just so I know you're there. But it was great to see. I had several dozen people come up to me and tell me how much they like my show, and I appreciate that. We're going to come back with more of the Inside Scoop. I want to talk about Bush's speech. I want to talk about what he said, what it meant to me, what it meant to you. And all you have to do to participate is call in toll-free, 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. We'll be right back with a little bit of Yikes McGee and then more of the Inside Scoop right after this.
He lies and he lies and he lies. He looks you right in the eye. And he lies all the time. He lies to his teeth. If you pick up a rock, he'll be lying underneath. He lies and he lies and he lies. To lie is a sin, can be a crime. That doesn't stop him, he just lies all the time. He lies and he lies and he lies. He lies and he lies and he lies. You look at the facts, it ain't nothing like that. He just lies and he lies and he lies.
George W. says that one of his top three legislative priorities is, quote, lawsuit reform, to keep us pesky citizens from suing corporations. Frivolous lawsuits, he calls them. But I wonder if his legislation will go the other way, too, stopping corporations from filing frivolous lawsuits against us ordinary Joes and Jills. Take the case of Alvis Coatings, Inc., an outfit that makes spray-on siding for homes. Hordes of unhappy customers have complained about the poor quality of its spray-on stuff. But rather than make amends or, in the best free enterprise tradition, improve its product, Alvis has unleashed its corporate legal beagles to sue a Georgia couple that were merely trying to get a little justice over what they consider a rip-off. Alan and Linda Townsend paid more than $16,000 for an Alvis spray-on job on their home, an unsightly job that left them decidedly unhappy. So they used their First Amendment free speech rights to create a website about their experience with Alvis's product. Soon, other angry Alvis customers began posting their own stories on the Townsend's website, telling how the coating on their homes had cracked, bubbled, and buckled. Next thing you know, the corporation sued Alan and Linda, asserting that the couple's website defames its product, confuses other consumers, and infringes on Alvis's trademarks. Alvis demanded $75,000 in damages plus punitive damages and attorney's fees. Such a judgment could ruin the Townsends, a middle-class family whose entire home is valued at about $150,000. Of course, corporations file such suits hoping to scare off any critics, but Alan and Linda have not backed off. Theirs has become a crucial case about online free speech. As long as this stuff is on our house, says Linda, we're going to talk about it. This is Jim Hightower saying, to encourage the Townsends in this landmark case, call Public Citizen, 202-588-1000.
Good game, Mike.
Thanks. Hey, by the way, how was the doctor the other day?
Good, but my cholesterol's 200. It's a little high.
Yeah, I'm around 760.
760? You're kidding me!
Pretty impressive, huh?
No, not impressive. Not impressive at all. What are you on, some sort of butter diet?
Yeah, you know, I figured at 760, getting a loan on the new car should be no problem.
Loan? What are you talking about, man? You're not going to live long enough to pay back a loan.
There's physical health, and then there's financial health. With ScorePower from Equifax, you'll get your credit report, credit score, and you'll learn how your credit decisions can affect your score, all for just $14.95. It's the first step toward healthy credit, and a score of 760 is pretty healthy. So check out ScorePower at Equifax.com or call 1-877-4-EQUIFAX. That's EQUIFAX. Equifax.
Yeah, I figure I can get up to around 790 by the end of the year, you know, if I'm lucky.
Look, a little advice.
Yeah?
Eat a vegetable, a smoothie, something, man.
Get the power. Score power at Equifax.com.
We got a president so bad, gotta be the worst we ever had. Got the job because of his dad, now we're all in danger. He come around up to no good, broke the old treaties cause he could, struts all around like a hood, got us in a world of trouble. Put him in a straitjacket, there's no doubt, let the psychiatrist figure him out. Listen while the demonstrators cheer and shout, we'll all feel better in the morning. Passionate conservative, my ass, in executions unsurpassed, surplus gone so fast, divided, not united. What's he wanna do now? What's he gonna try? Does he really think Armageddon is nigh? Does he care if children die? La 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 la. Put him in a straitjacket, there's no doubt, let the psychiatrist figure him out. Listen while the demonstrators cheer and shout, we'll all feel better in the morning.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine, bringing you all the news from Washington the government does not want you to know. That was Yikes McGee, and I'm playing his music in honor of the counter inaugural today, which occurred at the same time as the inauguration of the president. And I did go home, though, and catch a lot of the presidential inauguration, at least the speech. What's interesting to me is, well, the difference, I guess, between the inauguration and the counter-inauguration. I think my blogger puts it best. He writes, the inaugural parade looks more like a funeral procession, perhaps it was, with pallbearers, Secret Service men surrounding the hearse. The only signs of life came from the protesters. That may well be. I don't know. I wasn't there. I wasn't out on the parade route where I was, frankly, 4 years ago, and there's a reason for that. 4 years ago, any American in Washington, D.C. could go to the parade route and watch the inauguration. I went. I protested 4 years ago. I was extremely upset by the fact that the Supreme Court had chosen the President of the United States and rejected the American people's choice, Al Gore, the choice of the popular vote in America and the popular vote in Florida. And I was very upset and very proud of the fact, in fact, that Americans came from all over. I'd come from California at the time, and we had a lot more protesters than even they had supporters of the president. I was very proud of that. Well, they wanted to stop that this time. I mean, 4 years ago, the protests were so strong that when the presidential motorcade came and people were jeering, they had to speed up. In fact, they had to speed up so fast that the Secret Service men walking alongside had to break into a sprint to catch up to the presidential motorcade. I remember that quite well. I don't think they wanted that kind of embarrassment. This is a president who very much protects himself from embarrassment. That's why he has loyalty oaths for anyone who wants to attend his public gatherings. That's why in his town hall meetings he makes sure the only people asking the questions are people who agree with him. This is a president who very much does not want to be the president of all Americans. He only wants to be the president of those who agree with him. In fact, he made that quite clear in the press conference right after his election, where he said, if you come around to our ideas, then we welcome you. We welcome you. We welcome you if you agree with us. And if you don't, you're on your own, kid. So what do you do? What does one do as a loyal American citizen who opposes a president who very much is saying to you, you know what? You're not included. You're not part of this. I'm not going to reach out to those of you who disagree with me. What do you do? I mean, I got to tell you, I met Ronald Reagan, I should tell you, way back in the 80s, shook his hand. I certainly didn't agree with all of his policies, but I do think he did try to reach out to at least a lot more than George W. Bush did. Let me at least talk about some of the things that George Bush said. His speech basically had two main parts. One was freedom. That's 10 minutes of it. And really most of the speech, I mean, he must have said freedom. Someone should count how many times he said freedom or liberty. Human freedom, liberty, other lands. You know, this is stuff that I can generally agree with. I believe very much in the promotion of democracy. George Bush derided 4 years ago as nation building a bad thing. We can't be building up nations, protecting democracy. We can't be doing that. We have to defend America's interests. What George Bush said 4 years ago, I'm glad to see he's flip-flopped completely and supports democracy in other lands now, at least in his rhetoric he does. It's very interesting to me, of course, that that's not why we went to war in Iraq. We went to war because of weapons of mass destruction that weren't there. We went to war in Iraq because Bush was trying to claim some sort of connection with Osama bin Laden with 9/11 that wasn't there. But when those failed, he fell back on the third option, three times the charm, and the third option, of course, was democracy. And I think it is good to promote democracy in other lands. I think it's a wonderful thing. And, of course, we listen to Bush's rhetoric. He talks about every individual having a right to democracy, not to impose government on the unwilling. At one point he said, and this, I don't know, this to me is I guess it was for the second graders in the audience. I don't know. He said, oppression is wrong, freedom is right. Oppression is wrong, freedom is right. That's kind of hard to disagree with. I think oppression is wrong. I think freedom is right. So, not very profound, but sure, freedom is a good thing. Then George Bush went on to say, this is a direct quote, some have questioned the appeal of liberty, unquote. Some have questioned the appeal of liberty. Who, George, has questioned the appeal of liberty? Osama bin Laden hasn't questioned the appeal of liberty. No, he's questioned American imperialism. He's questioned we going in and taking over oil and bases of various countries. He's questioned Israel's policies. I don't agree with him on that, but he never questioned the appeal of liberty. I don't remember anyone saying, we hate your liberty, America. In fact, the only people I know that are questioning the liberty of Americans is the Bush administration. The Bush administration, which is imprisoning Americans without allowing them a trial. The Bush administration, which is imprisoning Americans who dare to dissent, who dare to show up where he's speaking and disagree with him. Did you notice that George Bush talked about freedom in other lands, but he never talked about freedom here at home? Do we have problems with freedom here at home? Do we have problems with the largest prison population in the world? Let me know. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. Maybe I'm missing something here. The toll-free number is 877-57-SCOOP. The lines are open. Why is it that George Bush only mentioned freedom abroad? He didn't mention freedom at home. He said that tens of millions have achieved freedom. I guess he's talking about Iraq, although they haven't had an election yet, and I don't think that freedom is achieved quite yet. Of course, he declared victory in Iraq way back a year and a half ago, 2 years almost now, and they haven't achieved that yet. Maybe he meant Afghanistan, though whole parts of the country are still run by the Taliban, run by Al-Qaeda. I know he didn't mean the United States. He was standing in the District of Columbia in Washington, D.C. Bush said, without apparent irony, and I don't think this is a president who understands irony, that tens of millions have achieved freedom, standing in the one part of the United States of America that has no representation in Congress. The one part of the United States of America that has no self-government. George Bush praised self-government in the District of Columbia, which has no self-government, and talked about it in other lands, but didn't talk about it at home. Of course, he wasn't consistent on other lands either, right? I mean, he didn't talk about the dictatorships we support, Egypt, Saudi Arabia, Pakistan. He talked about people in need and how we have to help people in need, but in Liberia, where they're taking children, killing their parents, and forcing those children to fight in an army, we did very little there. In Sudan, it's all rhetoric. There's genocide going on. We're doing nothing there. So all this talk about freedom, who is more free? I get Afghanistan's more free. I mean, that's a war we all supported. All right. It's not as free as it should be. Iraq, well, Saddam Hussein's a bad guy. Glad he's gone. But have the people really achieved freedom there yet? I don't know. What's interesting to me, though, is that American freedoms he didn't talk about. The fact that the government is watching us. And I did see, it was kind of fun to see, the people watching us at the demonstration. There was a guy, oh, he pretended to blend in, but it was very clear that he was looking around, watching everyone, taking notes. I guess I was honored to be officially on the government watch list for speaking out against the president. For all the paranoia of some on the left, there's no question that, hey, they were watching the protesters carefully, and I guess they have a right to do that. Though it shouldn't be based on our speech, it obviously should be based on our actions. I am as loyal an American as they come, and as nonviolent one as they come. But it does bother me a bit that we have government agents watching us. I don't know. What did you think? Did any of you attend the protest? Did any of you attend the inauguration? Did you watch it on TV? There at the protest, we were all wearing orange. Some of you wrote in we should wear black. We were wearing orange, and it's interesting. Some didn't know why. It's because of Ukraine. In the Ukraine, Yushchenko, who won the first election, his supporters wear orange. And, of course, the candidate supported by the dictatorship, supported by Russia as well, claimed victory. And the people marched in the streets. They marched for democracy. They got a fair election. And the orange revolution occurred. And so we hoped that Ukraine could teach us a little bit about democracy, that one day we could have an election where every American vote is counted. And it's amazing that there in the District of Columbia, the people who voted most against George Bush, 9-1 against George Bush, were being asked to fund his security. Never before has that been done, by the way. In no inaugural. In every other one, the government, the federal government, has paid for the security. But they were asking District of Columbia taxpayers to foot the $12 million bill for his security. Now, the corporations gave $40 million, right? But apparently D.C. taxpayers, they had to foot the bill. But I guess that's to be understood. After all, they have no representation in government. When I come back, I want to take your calls at 877-57-SCOOP. There are lines open. I hope you'll call in. But also I want to talk about George Bush's plan for an ownership society, the second part of his inaugural speech, because it's very striking to me how the reality and the rhetoric don't quite coincide. We'll be back after a little more of Yikes McGee's music and a commercial break with more of the Inside Scoop right after this.
He lies and he lies and he lies. To lie takes a liar, it's to steal takes a thief. To lie to the whole world takes a liar in chief. He lies and he lies and he lies. He lies and he lies and he lies. He must despise all...
The attitude of corporate advertisers seems to be that if brute force isn't working, they're probably not using enough of it. They pound us with incessant ads. In the media, in elevators, on sidewalks, in cabs, at gas pumps, even in urinals. Their latest intrusion, however, seems especially inappropriate. Public schools. All across the country, corporations are weaseling their brand names into young, impressionable minds by buying the naming rights to school facilities. A New Jersey elementary school gym is now named the ShopRite Supermarket Center. A Chicago-area high school football stadium is now Rust-Oleum Field. And the end zone of a high school football field in Plano, Texas, sports the bright, shiny logo of Krispy Kreme Donuts. Indeed, Plano School District has hired a full-time marketing director to hawk school properties to corporations that want to slap their ads on yet another space. There's even a marketing director for the National Federation of State High School Associations, and she's positively exuberant about this corporatization of public schools and school kids. Corporate involvement at the high school level is about to explode nationwide, she gushes. It's an unlimited, untapped market, and it's in places companies often can't easily reach. Great. School kids are not throwing open the schoolhouse door so companies can reach into their little heads. I understand it's a slippery slope, says a New Jersey superintendent, but we need the revenue. Oh, well, then it's okay, right? Another marketer says, commercialism is coming to a school near you. The high school cheerleaders will be brought to you by Gatorade, and the football team will be presented by Outback. This is Jim Hightower saying, if you think school ought to be for education, not corporations, call Commercial Alert, 503-235-8012.
If you've been thinking about consolidating your federal student loans, it's time to call College Loan Corporation at 1-800-2-COLLEGE. You'll quickly be connected to an expert loan consultant who will explain the benefits of the consolidation program, including locking in the lowest rate in history, reducing your current monthly payment by up to 58%, and cutting down multiple payments into one simple check. For more information, call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. That's 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
1 in 4 adults has high blood pressure. If you're one of them and you have a cold, Coricidin HBP has surprising news for you. The American Heart Association recognizes that decongestants found in many leading cold medicines can raise your blood pressure and interfere with blood pressure medication. So why risk it? Only decongestant-free Coricidin HBP provides a line of safe, powerful cold and flu medication specially formulated for people with high blood pressure. So make the safe choice. Coricidin HBP. Use as directed.
If you want to wag the dog, it's like falling off a log. It's so easy with propaganda. Propaganda, propaganda. Try and convince the folks the beach is never sandy. You can convert into lies what they seen with their own eyes. It's amazing. Propaganda. Life is so complex, so confusing. Everyone's just trying to make ends meet. You can brighten up their day, keep the facts out of their way. Just simplify the complex, repeat, repeat, repeat.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine, playing the music of Yikes McGee, who I have the pleasure of meeting. He sang his songs at the counter-inaugural protest I just attended. And I also been listening to George Bush's speech when I came back. I think it's important to hear both sides. And I talked about his discussion of freedom And I'm also going to talk about his ideas for an ownership society. Reading from my blog, Rod writes, "Mark, will you put the audio of your counter-inaugural speech in the archive? I'm dying to hear it. I'm depressed. I didn't make my way to D.C. for the inaugural outrage as I was there in 2001. Rod, I understand that redefeatbush.com will be putting up this this speech. It'll be up, they tell me, by this evening. I'm going to try to capture it and play it on my show at the Sunday Weekly Review this Sunday at 1 p.m., but you should be able to catch it on their website as well. And so I'm going to try to have that there for you. If you want to call in, the toll-free number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. You agree with me, you disagree with me, you think this counter-inaugural stuff is childish or worthwhile, I want to hear from you. 877-57-SCOOP. Caller, you're on the line with Mark Levine.
This is Ed from New York.
And hi, Ed.
Mark, I was thinking a lot about what you had to say, and some of the thought is that the counter-inaugural is a good idea because it unites different groups, and we came very close twice to winning the presidential election. The thing that we worry about is simply where one party took over the presidential election for around 30-some-odd years.
Yep.
And I think at this point we've got to bring everybody into our tent. I do think that the president's low, and I do think when he hits Social Security, more senior citizens are going to flip to the other side of the fence. And I make a prediction, Mark. My prediction is that the Senate will be substantially more Democratic in the 2006 election.
Well, I think you're right. You know, a lot of people don't realize that, of course, the Senate, which is becoming more and more Republican, in the next 2 years, we're going to have Senate seats open up that are more nationwide, not just in the South. I think you're probably right, Ed. I'll tell you, though, as I attend the county inaugural, and I, also you're right, I should say, Bush has the lowest approval rating of any re-elected president. He actually ties Richard Nixon in 73, which is interesting. I thought Nixon was more popular, given he just won that big victory in 1972, way bigger than certainly Bush's. But I just saw in the Post today, Bush's approval ratings at 52%, way lower than Clinton's 60 or Reagan's 68. But I'll tell you, Ed, part of my problem when I was out there, though, is I'm out there, I'm talking, giving basically a moderate Democratic Party Clintonite speech, talking about what I would do as Attorney General. And, you know, then also in the crowd are some people that are against all wars or the Green Party. And, you know, I respect the Greens, but I'm not a Green. And I got to tell you, it's hard to build an alliance with people you don't always agree with. At the same time, I want to distance myself from a few things, but accept most of the other things. And I don't know. I guess that's part of the problem of a Big Tent. I don't know if you have any views on that.
I think the Big Tent is always a problem, Mark. I mean, here, look. In order to win, you've got to have the Big Tent. Unfortunately, the Big Tent includes wackos.
Yeah,
and nuts.
There were some.
Wackos and nuts and people who have off-the-wall opinions. But you're better off getting their votes than having them not vote at all.
Yep.
And when I was thinking about the Senate, I was thinking, you know, a lot of Republicans are going to be coming up this time. I mean, people like Rick Santorum in Pennsylvania.
Oh, we're going to beat Rick Santorum, you bet. I guarantee you we're going to beat Rick Santorum. I'll make that prediction right now.
And there are a couple of other way off the wall right-wing Republicans who I don't think are going to be able to stand a chance. And I think especially if Senator Frist of Tennessee would go ahead with the so-called nuclear option on the Supreme Court,
yep,
that could polarize the country even more.
Well, it's interesting that you bring that up, because that's something where I would wonder if the courts would get involved. And let me explain what you're talking about, because I'm not sure everyone understands. The Constitution says that the Senate, and the House as well, gets to set its own rules. And that's right there in the Constitution. It's the plain language of the Constitution. I'll try to find it for you after the break. What Frist wants to do, and actually I think Republicans who are to the right, that basically a majority of the Senate can overturn the Senate's rules. Well, the Senate's rules are quite clear. It requires two-thirds of the Senate to overrule their rules. So what they're saying is they're going, the Senate is going to disregard its own rules. And, of course, that's unconstitutional. That's precisely against the Constitution. They want to do it to get in all these right-wing judges. But what they'd be doing, of course, is beginning a constitutional crisis. Because if those judges aren't approved according to the Constitution, one has to question whether they're actually constitutional judges at all. I think, actually, he won't go that far. I think that's quite a risky thing. It would tear up the country. But we'll see. Senator Frist doesn't talk to me very often. I don't understand all he's planning. I don't think he's going to go that far.
Well, it's a little bit like Roosevelt getting, packing the Supreme Court.
I think it's very similar.
Yeah, I was listening to David Gergen last night, and what he said last night I thought was very interesting. He said the most dangerous thing that happens almost all the time in a second term is that a second term president has hubris.
Yep, arrogance, pride.
And the hubris and arrogance is showing in all the black coats marching down Pennsylvania Avenue, and all the rest of the people not being there at all, and being forced to stand in areas where they could not obviously disagree with the president.
Right, and that of course is a difference from 4 years ago when we were actually allowed to be appreciated. There's also, of course, the larger point about alliances, and it's tough. A lot of the energy that I've seen, and I think it's a problem, and I don't know if anyone has any solutions, you can write it on the blog or call in, but a lot of the energy that we see is coming from the left. And I respect that. I respect the left part of my politics by any stretch. I consider myself, moderate Clintonite Democrat. And yet the energy is coming from the left. They are the people that are most energized. And at the protest, there weren't as many, as I saw, moderate Democrats like myself there. There was a lot of energy from the left. And it's frankly coming around to make me think that maybe we do need Howard Dean as Democratic National Chairman. Someone with a lot of energy, a lot of passion. That doesn't mean he's going to run for president. In fact, if he becomes chair, he won't run for president. But we need energy. We need passion. We need people to stop being depressed. And I know it's depressing. But get out and work. And frankly, if we don't take back the Democratic Party to be the liberal to moderate party that I support so much, we are in danger. From the left and the right, we're in danger of people pulling it over to the far left. We're in danger of people pulling the Democratic over to the right and making it, a Republican Party light. Someone that's not as bad as the Republican Party. And I think the Democrats who are dispirited need to get out there and show the ideas. And frankly, I think that the battle over Social Security will be the idea that brings out traditional Democrats, people that support unions, the elderly, teachers, the base of the Democratic Party, so people who believe in civil rights, feminists, that we can all come together and agree that the protection that we've had for 70 years in Social Security shouldn't go away. I think Ed's absolutely right. Social Security will be, frankly, like Clinton's health care proposal, Hillary Clinton's health care proposal 10 years ago, which I still think would have been a good idea. This is far worse. This is not a change to provide people with health care. It's a change to take away people's guaranteed retirement, and I think it's all going to change. And when we come back, I want to talk about what George Bush said about Social Security in his inauguration speech today. He talked about the ownership society, and I want to try to parse the words and hear what he had to say and comment on it. I'll do that when I come back. If you want to call in, the toll-free number is 877-57-SCOOP. And in the break right now, instead of going to commercial, I'm going to play one of my favorite songs from Yikes McGee. It's called Osama's Song, and it's a song in the person singing of Osama bin Laden. Let's listen in.
Hello, Mama. It's me, Osama. I guess you're worrying, wondering where I've been staying. Got in a world of trouble, lit out on the double, hiding out in Pakistan. I'm eating good, I'm praying. I thought Bush would come looking, but I guess I'm off the hook. Either Iraq hadn't come back. I heard they arrested old Saddam Hussein. It's hard to decipher the bushes. They'd rather go settle that score. Now they're allied with lackeys attacking Iraqis while I run the terrorist war. Yeah, Ma, I run the terrorist war. Mama, it's hard to hide, cause you know I'm 6'5". In a land where the people are short, I just slip on a burka, head on down to Loya Jirga, poke around all day at the Sharia court. I should be in heaven behind 9/11. By now at least that's what I thought. But to be a martyr, you gotta get slaughtered. And to do that, you need to get caught. Tired of waiting around for the bushes. I pass the time, I do what I can. Pray all day, make videos. Hang out with the Taliban. We're working on the Taliban plan. If I could get out of this kidney dialysis, I'd be a free man, but alas, you'd think they'd be able to follow that cable right down to the middle of Krakistan Pass. They smoked me out, they got me running, then they stopped coming. What made them give up on the chase? They better take a look around, get their nose to the ground, or they'll find themselves staring again at my face. And don't mention this to the Bushes, and I hate to talk out of school, but it seems kind of queer to leave me standing here. Is America that easy to fool? Is this the exception or is it the rule? I thought Bush would follow, Mama. His big talk is hollow. I'm coming home now, will you fix me some chow? Wait, I think I'm losing my signal. Let me move over this hill. Hello, Mama, can you hear me now? Hello, Mama, can you hear me now? Hello, Mama, can you hear me now? Hello, Mama, can you hear me now?
Well, that's Yikes McGee, and his song is Hello, Mama. It's Osama's song, and while I think it's a little too kind to Osama, I mean, after all, it makes him sound like a, I don't know, lost country music star. I think the point is generally valid. Osama must be wondering why it is that George Bush didn't come after him. Let him go at Tora Bora. Is not putting many troops in Pakistan or Afghanistan. We have 10 times the troops in Iraq, where Osama never was. It's a strange question. In fact, next week I'm going to have a woman from the State Department, a dissenter, if you will, who left the Bush administration because she got so angry at them moving resources out of Afghanistan and into Iraq, a country that never attacked us. So I hope you'll listen to that next week. I do want to talk about the second part of George Bush's speech because it has to do with Social Security. It has to do with what George Bush calls an ownership society. And it was very interesting to me that he cited three laws, three very, very good laws from the 30s, from the 40s, from before, as justification for what he wants to do, which is basically end Social Security. Here's the three laws he cited. He cited the Homestead Act, the GI Bill, and, believe it or not, the Social Security Act itself. Now, let's look at these three acts, all of which were terrific. I totally agree. They were wonderful things. What did the Homestead Act do? The Homestead Act took government property and allowed private individuals to buy it for like a dollar and to fix it up and to have a property of their own. If anything, it goes back to the biblical idea of the Jubilee year, the idea that property should be redistributed every 50 years so that everyone would have a chance to own property. What a socialist idea. What a redistribution of wealth idea. What a class warfare idea. Bush is supporting this? Well, he's not. I mean, look at inheritance taxes, which he wants to end, right? George Bush does not support the idea that we have to take government money or government land or rich people's land and redistribute it among the poor, and yet he cites the Homestead Act. What about the GI Bill? The GI Bill, of course, allowed people who served in the military during World War II to come home and get an education. The equivalent today would be Pell Grants, would be student loans, which George Bush is cutting. He's not allowing it to increase with the rate of population. And then the third thing he says is Social Security, which George Bush is working to dismantle piece by piece. How ironic. George Bush talks about an ownership society. He says, as he said in his inaugural address today, that every citizen should control his or her own destiny, which sure sounds good, I think, except for the fact that people don't always save for their retirement. No one's preventing people from saving for their retirement. We have 401ks, we have IRAs, we have all kinds of ways for people to save for their retirement. But let's not forget what happened 100 years ago when we didn't have Social Security, when we had a more or less a pure capitalist system and people tried to live paycheck to paycheck, which they did, and of course they had no retirement, and some 70% of people who were elderly were impoverished. Today, that's less than 10%. Today, 20% of American seniors rely entirely on Social Security. Because you know what, George Bush? I got news for you. There are still Americans living paycheck to paycheck. I know you've never seen them. I know you never talked to them. I know you don't know any of them. But there are millions of Americans, indeed more Americans in poverty, far more. Than 4 years ago, than 8 years ago under Bill Clinton. And they are living paycheck to paycheck. And if you tell them that, they're not going to get their Social Security benefits, even if you give them a little bit, you know, I don't know how you can't cut their payroll taxes. George Bush has basically admitted this because that would cause a $2 trillion deficit. We don't have that money. After all the money was spent on George Bush's tax cuts. So basically, you're just going to cut their benefits. And how are they going to survive? What interests me the most is this idea of social Darwinism. Now, let me explain what I'm talking about. Charles Darwin, of course, believed in evolution. Social Darwinism teaches, it was a big philosophy back 100 years ago. Frankly, it was the philosophy in many ways that the Nazi Party supported. Basically says, you're on your own, that survival of the fittest, which we know occurs in animal species and evolution, should occur with humans as well. If you are fit, if you succeed, you should have anything you want, and if you don't, you die. Frankly, they did that in Sparta, back in Greece, ancient Greece. They left the weak babies on the hill to die. And capitalism, which works generally, which rewards those who do more, if not tempered by a little bit of socialism, a little bit of American dream and education and healthcare and a safety net for everyone, it becomes social Darwinism. It becomes the idea that if you can't make it in America or you make a mistake or you're doing well but then you get disabled because you get sick or you have a car accident, you're out of luck. You're gone. No health care, no education, no retirement. Did you notice that George Bush said self to government means depending on the self? He talked a lot about the self. Really, what George Bush was saying is we should all be selfish. At the same time, as he's saying in his rhetoric, serve a cause larger than yourself. Saying that the unwanted have worth, but he's saying do it privately. The government shouldn't care for these people. Do it privately. Do it like we did 100 years ago when people died in the streets of starvation at the time of Upton Sinclair's The Jungle. I got news for you, George Bush. Charity doesn't cover all the poverty. There are homeless in America. You never see them because you're in your limos. There are homeless in America. There are poor people in America. And every religion I know of, certainly Christianity, Judaism, Islam, And other religions as well. Atheists, secular humanists say we've got to look out for those who are least among us. And I want to conclude by telling you about my trip back from the protest, because I went back on the metro and there were a group of kids there. And my favorite part, and I hope some of you are listening because I gave them my cards. Kids, hey, if you hear this, send me a note. Let me know on the blog that you heard this because I was very impressed. I talked with them, and they're about 17, 18 years old, which is a great age. Age old enough to understand what's going on around them, and yet an age young enough to still have an open mind. And a woman there said she was a conservative, and she said she supported a flat tax, and she said, you know, basically people should be on their own. And I reminded her that we're all born helpless in this world. Every one of us is born as a helpless baby. And it's only because of our parents and our country and those who look out for us that we're able to even survive. We also die pretty helpless. And given that we begin with nothing and we end with nothing, I think it's important that we understand that people help us before we're born, and they help us as we get to our old age. And when we're in the prime of life, we have an obligation to help others. John F. Kennedy said 44 years ago, ask not what your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country. And you can serve in the military, and if you have a lot of wealth, you can give a bit more in taxation. George Bush said, serve a cause larger than yourself, but his politics are all about helping yourself at the expense of your fellow man. We are a huge country. We are a wealthy country. We can afford a safety net. We can afford to keep our seniors, just as we have for 70 years, from falling into poverty. And how ironic that George Bush's ownership society, where he talks about freedom and he talks about giving back, would deny Americans this safety net that they've had for 70 years. So don't be fooled by the rhetoric, folks. It's going to be 4 long years, but I will be there by your side to let you know what's going on in Washington, because if we don't stay vigilant,